So hello, this is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm here at the University of Plymouth in the Cognovo program, and I'm here with Diego Maranon, who's a research fellow here on a Marie Curie research fellowship. But what's interesting is he's an artist by avocation and training, working in a group with a number of scientists and roboticists and very people from very different disciplines. So Diego, why don't you tell us a little bit about your interest in embodied cognition and somatics and what you're planning to do as part of your thesis research?
Sure. I mean, I can give a bit of a personal background, the thing that motivated me to this research area. I did train as a dancer, and when I started training as a dancer, one day I discovered how a set of muscles behind my shoulder blades could pull my shoulder blades down, and I remember that day when I discovered those muscles, this incredible feeling of confidence and being present. And it was that time that I realized that physiological things like structure, like posture, could affect the way I experienced the world and the way I felt, and so in this research project, the general question is, how does the body shape the mind? How does the body contribute to phenomenological experience?
So one of the particular things that you've told me about is, normally we think of human movement as being activated by muscles and bones, but in fact the soft tissue in the body has a crucial role, and I think you made the comment that if we had no soft tissue, we'd actually fall down.
Right, and the soft tissue that you've just referred to is the fascia. There are different kinds of fascia, and there's the kind of fascia that wraps around your muscles, and that's called myofascia. And over the past few years, or maybe the past decade, it's been a hot topic of research, at least in sports science, in physiology, and increasingly in dance. And I was just at a conference in Coventry where a dance researcher was talking about how the fascia seems to be one of the largest sensory organs that we have, that you can consider it a sensory organ. And I was just thinking, isn't it interesting that the pre-fascia way of understanding the way the human body is kept together was that under the skin, we have a skeleton which is moved by bones. But what people are, researchers are suggesting now is that without this fascia, this kind of tight bag that wraps around everything, we couldn't even move. And there's a new model for movement based on the tensegrity model. I'm not very familiar with tensegrity, yeah. But
do we actually, are we aware of our fascia? How does it enter into awareness?
I think that's a really great question. And I think some people are more aware of it than others, and there are techniques being developed. And I'm really interested in developing techniques to become more aware of your own bodily structure. I mean, I recall the different times in my life when I've become aware of bony structures. That's my pubic bone. Those are my sit bones. Oh, that's my lumbar, my L4 vertebra. And it seems like it must be possible to develop a similar awareness of fascia. Bodybuilders are particular, and any athlete are very, they're particularly aware of muscles. Fascia is, that would be interesting.
At the moment, you're taking some specific training. You want to explain that?
Sure. I'm being certified to become a Feldenkrais practitioner. The Feldenkrais method is a first-person-based movement and touch-based kind of method, and that allows you to understand how your neuromuscular patterns are so that movement can be easier and less painful if you do suffer from some kind of pain.
Okay, so how do you see these ideas translating into a thesis project?
So
you've got 3 years,
right?
A third of the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm relying on a structure that's been laid out by the philosopher Richard Schusterman around somatics and aesthetics, which he calls soma aesthetics. So he advances that soma aesthetics, the practice of the field of soma aesthetics is composed of an analytical part, a practical part and a pragmatic part, and they're respectively, well, analytical is descriptive, the pragmatic is normative, and the practical is the actual thing of that unfolds through time. So for example, yoga is a pragmatic and some aesthetic practice, but the practice of yoga is the thing that you actually do in the studio, and that's not captured. So what I'm trying to do in my thesis is to advance our knowledge of somatics in each of these three domains, analytically by integrating with the current things that we know from physiology, cognitive science. Pragmatically, I'm developing a practice based out of the somatic practice that I know in the Feldenkrais method, and then doing it. And through the workshops, I'll be holding workshops. I'll be creating a body of knowledge that's transmitted not just through text.
So the workshops will be with other students, with other people?
It will be with other students. I have a secondment that I'm doing in London. So I'll be doing them in London. I'm also going to the Philippines to do a collaboration with a design research company that is set up, and exploring how technologies might actually help us develop this kind of embodied awareness. So and there's a vast literature on that, but that's something else that I'm really looking into. Developing technologies for cultivating somatic knowledge.
One of the things, obviously the Cognovo thing is a really unusual experiment. There are 24 of you, I think, doing PhDs at the same time, from very, very different disciplines. How have you been interacting with the other students?
We're about a year and a half into the program, and I wish that our PhDs were only starting now, knowing what I know now. A lot of the most interesting conversations happened at the very beginning, and it happened informally, and there's still a lot of optimism about how much time we had. I do remember at the very beginning of the program spending a lot of time in pubs talking about consciousness and cognition and exploring things. And now in our second year, we've tended to kind of retreat back into our silos. Of disciplines, because there are some pragmatic constraints, and you think about who's going to be at the Viva, who's going to and then it's right now it feels a bit like jumping through hoops, but I imagine that the workshops that we've had and the conversations that we've had in the past in the workshop room and in the pubs, that's going to spin off into something really interesting that will beyond our PhD program will.
Have you actually done any activities that are involve collaboration with another student? Or? The answer is maybe no.
We've tested stuff on each other. I've invited some of my colleagues to sit down with me and brainstorm ideas. And so far, none of that has really worked out. But I know some of my colleagues have really, done things together.
One of the things that we just chatted about before, given that I've spent a lot of my career in space activities with space scientists and rubbed shoulders with astronauts and space doctors, we discussed a little bit the comments I made yesterday about gravity as a cognitive structuring sense. And one normally doesn't think of gravity that way because it's a constant. I mean, gravity is a constant force on us. But obviously, people that go into zero gravity then have to confront how to function in a world where that sense no longer is functional. And so why did that trigger an interest in you, since I mentioned it?
Sure. I mean, Moshe Feldenkrais talks about gravity. In a lot of somatic practice, especially the Feldenkrais method, the theory is that we build our habitual patterns, and we activate these habitual patterns, especially when we're standing up, and then gravity organizes our body in a certain way. So a lot of the Feldenkrais method actually involves you lying down, which first of all activates your parasympathetic system, it causes you to calm down, but it also allows you to rediscover new ways of moving, because gravity is acting on your body in a really different way.
One of the, and I mentioned this to someone else, there's a researcher who works with artists called Eric Jarrus, who's works in Belgium mostly, and he had a very striking installation that I saw, and I forget the name of it, but I'll put it on the website, where basically he put a head-mounted display on your head, and so, for instance, he would lie you down on a table, and you'd be looking at the ceiling, but as he moved you through the room, you were looking horizontally. So suddenly the gravity was orthogonal to the way you were looking.
That's really interesting.
And what was surprising is pretty quickly you accommodated to the fact that you were looking at the ceiling, but you were going down the hallway looking horizontally, and gravity was in the wrong direction. And so he basically, and then he could rotate you. I should send you a link to
definitely
to his work. By tilting you, and then you were wearing these goggles with the video, he could alter the relationship of gravity to your vision.
That's right, yeah.
In a way, and obviously since it was a head-mounted goggle, you didn't have any other cues, and it was a very, very strong experience.
Did you try it out?
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you describe it? Like, what is it like?
You can hear me talking about it so enthusiastically, because it was really an intense experience. It was a very interesting installation, because he put you on a wheelchair, and so you were sitting down and they wheel you around. You were wearing these VR goggles, and then there'd be people who'd come and talk to you, but they weren't really there. And then someone would shake your hand. So I mean, you were seeing this virtual human being, but they were shaking your hand. And so it was all these contradictory cues,
right, yeah,
where your sensory experience and your visual experience was somehow manipulated by his apparatus, and it was a very very intense. I've actually been into zero gravity on parabolic flights, and I'll tell you an anecdote that I tell my kids when I came back. So we went on, with Arts Catalyst, we went up on the Russian parabolic cosmonaut training plane, and I got very sick. So what they had us sort of being watched by trainers, so that they laid me down on the floor of the plane and told me to close my eyes. I was basically space sick. I mean, I was not feeling well. So I was lying on the floor of the plane, and the parabola went down into the zero gravity phase. And I opened my eyes, and I was floating in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And I had this experience, which a lot of astronauts have reported, which is I didn't know where the edge of my body was.
That's really interesting.
And and some astronauts report that suddenly you feel like the edge of the body is the edge of the room, because that you've lost all the sensory cues of where the edge of your body is. And you hear me talking about it, and it sounds a little bit weird, but it was clearly a cognitive experience that I couldn't compare to anything else. And the story I told my kids when I came back, they were teenagers at the time, was I've done a number of things in life. I've had sex, drugs, rock and roll, zero gravity, and there's no way you can describe any one of those sensory experiences in terms of the other. They're almost incommensurable things. Yeah. And that zero gravity experience for me was like that. I didn't have the vocabulary to describe it in terms of anything else. This funny feeling about the edge of my body going to the room was part of that.
That's really fascinating. I know that the word that's often used to describe our sense of position in space is proprioception. But what you're saying is that it's proprioception is generally position in space, but it's more about the sense of weight, of gravity, exerting a force.
And in this case, the self-awareness you have of where the edge of your body is.
And how that links to the sense of the contained self.
So I'll dig up these references and send you the link.
I'm sure you've come across the body swapping experiments by the, I can't remember. You've come across these body swapping experiments, which are extension of the rubber glove illusion, have you? So the idea, this was published about 3 years ago, and using the Oculus Rift, this is not about gravity, I'm just, I was thinking about your Oculus Rift experiment. They were able to make people believe that their bodies were smaller or larger than they actually were.
Yeah.
So, and you can probably imagine how it's done. You extend the rubber band illusion when you have an Oculus Rift, and when you look down, you don't see your own body, but actually there's a camera looking down a Barbie doll's body or some gigantic doll's body. And it's interesting that when they asked participants to estimate sizes and distances, people who thought they were in a smaller body than they were overestimated distances and sizes and vice versa. So it's interesting how the structure of our body, you know, influences our perception of scale.
Okay, Diego, we're out of time, so it's been delightful discussing with you, and thank you for being on Creative Disturbance.
Thanks for having me.